I found Uncle Fawcett in a bed with restraints on him. I dropped my purse. I found Uncle Fawcett in the bed with restraints on him. I dropped my purse on the edge of his bed. "Oh, Uncle Fawcett, what have they done to you?" The little red-haired nurse from the desk came in. "Mrs. McQuaid," she began, "we tried to call you, but we've been unable to get an answer, so we called your sister. I hope she told you." "I haven't talked to my sister in days," I said. "What's going on? Why is my uncle strapped down?"
"He's lost his ability to walk," she said. "He keeps getting up and falling. We tried putting him in a chair, but he keeps leaping out. We're afraid he's going to hurt himself."
I looked at him there, helpless, confused.
"Trudy,"
he kept saying over and over and staring glass-eyed at the ceiling.
"That's all he says," the nurse said.
I knew what to expect. The doctor had told me, but seeing it happen now was even harder than I suspected. I ran from the room with my hands over my mouth. I would have gone to the sunroom, but it was filled with patients playing bingo. So I darted out the door and sat at the picnic bench under the shade tree. I laid my head over and cried. I suppose that in that moment, I felt far too sorry for myself, but it broke my heart to see him like that. He was wearing a diaper and had to be fed like a baby. I knew there would come a day when he wouldn't even remember how to swallow, and then, little by little, he would slip completely away. As a girl, I had taken care of Mama at home, because she had always had a myriad of health problems. And then when Daddy had been diagnosed with a bad heart, I had taken care of him. And in a sense, I had always taken care of Cookie. I had always stood up for her at school and tried to be there for her when she went through her bouts of depression. I suppose I had taken care of Bob, too. It was my working at the marina that allowed him to pursue his hobbies, and I understood him when no one else did. It wasn't always easy, but I had stood by him. As I sat there reflecting on my life, I realized that the only person who had ever tried to take care of me was Uncle Fawcett, and now he was helpless. He was the one who needed care, and I couldn't do a thing for him. No one could. I pulled my shoulders back and dried my eyes. "Toughen up," I told myself. I got up and headed back inside. Besides, I had left my purse in there. I went in and apologized to the nurse for running out like that, and she said she understood. I went back into Uncle Fawcett's room and told him about Bob being gone and that Cookie was getting along all right. I told him that his tomatoes looked good and that Daddy had sold the chickens. He smiled a time or two. Afterwards, I went downstairs and waited by the pop machines for Daniel. When after several minutes he hadn't shown up, I decided to walk down toward Marion's room. Outside her door, I heard his voice, soft and kind, like he was speaking to an infant. "So anyway," I heard him say, "I'm going to help this girl find her husband on my vacation instead of fishing. Remember, I told you I was going fishing. But I got to thinking, what if it was you out there missing, and I had no idea where you'd gone? People deserve to be happy, don't you think?" "Yeah, I know, I know. You're the one who always tells me that. I may be gone for a little while, but I'll be back as soon as I can, okay? You know I love you." Of course, she didn't answer him. "When I come back," he said, "I'll bring you a present. I know you like cats, so if I can find one that you don't have, I'll bring it to you. But if I can't find you a cat, then I'll bring you a puppy or a pony." I looked through the crack at the door hinges. He was holding her hand, and like Uncle Fawcett, she was lying there drooling, staring at the wall. If anyone had a reason to be bitter at the world, it was Daniel Ransom. And yet, Somehow, he still found the courage to smile and joke and help people like me. How did he do it? Bye, sweetheart, he said, then kissed her hand. Yikes, he was getting up. I ran back down the hall as fast as I could go and disappeared around the corner. I eased across the room and stood in front of the pop machine like I was trying to make a selection. It's not nice to spy on people, he said. I froze. Here, you drop this. I turned around and he handed me a small calendar that must have fallen out of my purse while I was running. So why were you peeping in on me?
I came down to see if you were still down here, I said.
How'd you know where to find the room?
I asked an orderly. I didn't tell him that I had known where Marion's room was for a long time. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have come down.
No, coming down there was fine, he said. Running off like a mischievous teenager makes me wonder about you. Most people would knock on the door and ask a man whether he's ready or not. But then again, I keep reminding myself, you aren't like most people. I grabbed my calendar. Stop saying that. He turned and headed up the stairs. I stuffed the calendar back in my purse. Oh, he was right. I'm sorry, I said. I ran to catch up to him. I don't know why I do that.
If you ask me, you act like a person who's walked on the edge of a volcano for so long that you're afraid that any and every action is going to cause an eruption.
We reached the door and went outside. I was still having to run to keep up with him.
What do you mean by that?
We got in the truck. He turned the key. I've seen abuse victims before, and I know what the signs are.
I'm not an abuse victim,
I squawked as he pulled out onto the highway.
Bob has never hit me, not ever. And he didn't run around and drink. He's been a good husband.
I'm not talking about physical abuse, he said. Ever hear of emotional abuse? Verbal abuse? In that moment, I forgot about how he had been so sweet to his wife, about how he had let me stay on his boat. All I could think about was that he somehow thought I was a weak victim of spouse abuse, and it made me so angry that I wanted to get out of his truck.
If you think my husband is so bad, then why are you helping me find him?
I didn't say I thought your husband was abusive. I said that you exhibit the same behaviors as people I've seen who have undergone years of emotional and verbal abuse.
I do not, I said. I'm a very independent person.
He gave me a sneaky half grin. I'm just saying.
Well, quit saying, and quit trying to psychoanalyze me. You're always sizing me up, mentally, emotionally, physically. Stop it.
All right, I'll try to stop. But tell you what, if you like, you can size me up. I crossed my arms and thought for a moment.
Answer me this one question, I said, and don't you dare lie to me.
If you answer this one question truthfully, it will tell me everything I need to know about you.
His eyes widened.
Wow, just one question, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, what is it?
In all the years that your wife has been, you know, like she is, have you ever once,
this is a very personal question, but since we're sizing each other up,
go on, he said. Have I ever what?
Been with another woman. And I don't mean like right now, being in the same vehicle or in the same restaurant. I mean like being, you know.
Do you mean, have I cheated on Marion because of the way she is?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
He said. Some question. A little unfair, don't you think?
Yeah.
So, have you?
No, he blurted. God, no. I love her. The way she is doesn't change what she means to me.
He looked at me with a seriousness that made chills go down my back, and I knew that he meant every word of it.